So the purpose of this is more like a kind of development chat about your own teaching and maybe about mine as well. You always need help too. And because this session we focused on defining tasks and task-based approaches in general,
yeah,
we did look at a couple of specific examples, but I think it'd be nice. You mentioned in your post in the forum, Stephen, you've been trying maybe some things from the McCutcheon, the Anderson and McCutcheon book.
Yeah, that's right.
Trying something with some of your business students and company. It seemed very interesting.
Yeah.
Is there any particular lesson you'd like to maybe talk about?
Well, I think perhaps the most successful real life lesson, or at least focused towards a particular, apart from the business ones that I suggested that I'm still, I'm going through the process trying to develop these lessons in the businesses. But the one that I wanted to talk to you about today was the one that I mentioned in my first post from session two. And the way I'm trying to help my student develop his YouTube videos, what he's intending to do is he's intending to have weekly YouTube videos that he can present in English for English-speaking Europeans on the continent, largely. He's not focusing it towards native speakers in the UK or English nationals in the UK.
Yeah.
Because what he's hoping to do is have a bank of a few videos, four or five before Christmas, and then release those week to week, and then for us to work on how he can do that. And so I, looking at the different types of tasks that you went through on your presentation, I suspect that the type that I'm trying to implement there is more task, teach, task, I think. Mm-hmm. Because it's a one-to-one situation, it's very much, well, the setup that I have at the moment is I try to, because he's the expert in what he does, I'm certainly no business coach or life coach, mm-hmm. He will come to me with the theme of the week. He will let me know about it beforehand. And when we meet in the lesson, it's a two-hour lesson on Friday mornings. He will go through what he wants to say. We'll have a look at the language that he uses, try to improve that together so that I'm not pushing him in a direction that he doesn't want to. So I'm not advising him on language that is not necessarily the nuanced meaning that he wants to get across. And then we, not so much a script, but talking points. Mm-hmm. And then we practice those in front of a video camera, or he does on his own while I sit to one side, mm-hmm. checking what he does, and then we try to develop something that can be a finished product that he's happy with to post online.
Mm-hmm. So in a way, you're I know what you're talking about. It's like you're kind of shadowing him. He knows how to do the task in his own language.
Yeah.
And he wants to do it in English, and your role is someone, I suppose, to get feedback from as he goes through the process of scripting it and starting to record it. Is that right?
Yeah, I think so. Sometimes he will jump ahead of himself into a different area, and I will try to help him catch that if he's veering off course, mm-hmm. To focus it on, because these videos that he's trying to post are only 2 or 3 minute long videos. Mm-hmm. However, it takes quite a bit of work in order to set all that out and go through the individual stages of what he wants to say, how he wants to say it, how he wants to deliver it. And then if, for example, in the earlier videos that he wanted to do, I would, after we'd settled on a group of areas and early ones, we started to script themselves. And I would try and deliver those myself for him to observe, record, and then use that for his intonation, rhythm and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. So you'd record a model for him.
Yeah, that's right.
That he could shadow.
Yeah.
And what's the topic? What's the kind of broad topic of his his YouTube videos?
Well, at the moment, what he's trying to do is trying to, they are, in his words, quick boost motivations, only 2 to 3 minutes long. At the moment, the recent ones that we've been talking about are the mood influenced by the people around you, how you analyze, how you analyze the people around you to try and set out a pros and cons of who you're in contact with, who's buoying you up, who's bringing you down, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. In order for, he hopes, for people to be watching his videos from time to time. And his aim is to develop his language in such a way that he feels confident that he can walk down the street. And if something occurs to him, he can record a video from his phone at arm's length on the move, that kind of thing.
Right, okay. To be independent as well, not to need you there necessarily.
Yeah, exactly.
And, okay, that sounds interesting. So this is not just one lesson, this is ongoing, I suppose. This is repeated.
That's right, yeah.
Got a new idea.
That's right. And my hope is that that I'm not giving him... I hadn't thought about it before session two in this particular way, but my hope is that he will be able to learn from the conversations and the structure that we give this task of his, and then be able to learn from the language that we use in order to take that language and apply it in different situations in his other English speaking production.
And what are his strengths and weaknesses as you see them as he tries to perform this task?
I see his... Okay, that's a good question. I think he tries to speak too quickly. Mm-hmm. There are several elements to his videos that make... he's quite a perfectionist. So he will record 10, 12 attempts at one two-minute video, for example. Mm-hmm. Sometimes he's... Well, when he tries to concentrate on delivering it, first of all, he has to, the script or the guidance that we've set out, he can't look at that because he needs to be making contact with the supposed viewers that he will have in the future. He has to remember about his body language, his position to the camera, his facial expression, etc. At the same time as concentrating on the language that he's trying to get correct.
Right.
I think he speaks too quickly, and I think he needs to calm that down a little bit. Mm-hmm. But the problem is that at first he was calming it down too much. And mm-hmm. so his facial expression was showing engagement, happiness type thing, but his speech was too lethargic in order to match that. So it looked a little bit off kilter.
So it was like discourse management, I suppose, pace.
Yes, I think so.
Intonation to match with. Yeah. Okay.
And it takes quite a lot of effort for him because, as I suggested to him at the beginning, I suggested to him for his first video to come out right out and say, as you know, English isn't my first language, but I'm hoping to help you, et cetera, so that he can take the pressure off himself for accuracy purposes. He makes quite a few mistakes, quite a few repeated mistakes, which mainly find... as far as I can tell, mainly find interference or transference from Polish, especially prepositional differences.
Right.
The recent ones I've come across, for example, we would say in the swimming pool. In Polish, they say on the swimming pool, for example, which to us sounds rather strange, just as in the swimming pool to him sounds unusual.
And I guess there's different phases. Are you trying to correct him on the spot or do recasts with him, or are you doing delayed more because he's recording it, or what are you?
A mixture of different things, because when he first does it, we will set it out in stage. So what he will do is he'll set the introduction in 1, 2, 3, 4 short paragraphs, and if they are, first of all, we'll practice them. I will ask him questions about whether he means this or that. The recasts are difficult to give on the spot. It's more because he's trying to keep the flow. It's difficult to recast, and it's more explicit negative feedback, then it would be recast. But when we talk about it later on, or in general terms, I do try to recast rather than stopping him. It's this, it's that, and so on.
I'm just wondering if maybe at an earlier stage of all this preparation, he could, if you got him to talk to you about his topic as if you were having a conversation.
Okay.
As an early rehearsal, that might allow you to do a bit more spontaneous feedback at that point. That might help him as he starts to do more, you know, obviously he's going to start rehearsing it more as if he's going to give it to camera. And then, as you said, he's actually trying to record bits of it on camera.
Yeah.
But that might be an option, like you say, that gives you a chance to mix up the feedback from a bit of on the spot to obviously you're going to be doing delayed because of the nature of the task.
Yeah.
And I'm sure he's taken that feedback and he's trying to rehearse the task again or record it again, right?
Yeah, he does. What we do is if we don't manage to succeed in recording a video that he's happy with within the 2 hours, what he'll do is he's got quite the setup with the blackened background screen and lights either side of him to give good lighting on his face. He'll take that back home, set it up at home, and he'll practice. And he'll often send me quick videos of setting it up, not videos, quick pictures of setting it up, send me a WhatsApp photo, doing the task now, and so he's working on his own end as well.
So that might be an option then, because if he's like, you know, he's doing this, he's motivational videos, I guess it's business coaching, so that's the kind of area, then there might be occasions when he might have to do this with a client also, face-to-face.
Exactly. That's what originally started his interest in doing this. Because I know there was something, I think, on I can't remember which episode it was. I think it was a discussion between you and Jeff on one of your podcasts where you were talking, and forgive me, I can't remember exactly the topic that it was, but I think you mentioned something along the lines of, if you're jumping on the bandwagon with a particular thing, you're already too late. If you, in fact, it might be when you talk to Paul. Paul, that's right. Yeah, sorry. When you and this is what my student thinks here. Although life coaching and business coaching is starting to take off in Poland, it's not taking off for a teaching or coaching in English. So he's trying to get ahead of the curve or stay in front of things by doing this type of thing.
Yeah, actually, I thought about what Paul said then a bit later, and I don't know if I agreed with it. Maybe with some things he's right, but there seems to be a certain room in any market for a number of followers of the original.
Yeah,
I have no idea who pioneered business coaching, but it's been around for a long time. I think we were talking more about English language coaching.
Okay,
which you see a lot of, especially on platforms like LinkedIn. And I know my old boss, Duncan Ford, at Oxford TEFL here in Barcelona, who's a teacher training in a private school, he's quite big on it. But that, you know, going back 5 years. So anyway, that's by the by. We our students need to do the tasks they need to do, whether we think that they're jumping on any bandwagons or not, for him it's important. But I think that might be a nice variation to try, Stephen. Because it's not completely unnatural that he might be doing a similar kind of pitch to a client or a similar coaching session to a client, but it may be a little more informal and it gives the client a chance to respond. And maybe that's a role play as well.
Yeah, there's some, for example, I might suggest some language to him, which he pushes back on effectively because he says, that because I don't have the experience in life coaching, I say, we can't say that to the person listening, we can't say that to our client, because it has negative connotations in terms of self-development, etc. So
right. Okay.
I do get some, it's quite a lively interaction.
Sure. But let's imagine then that this is very much TBLT on the fly. You're being led to a large extent by your student's expertise in doing the task and what he wants to achieve. Mm-hmm. In that sense, the task hasn't been investigated from multiple viewpoints, but at least you've got an enthusiastic person doing the task who probably can clearly defined what he regards as successful or successful or not performance.
Yeah.
And that's, in a way, he's going to assess as well as you whether or not he thinks he's got the task right, or as you said, he's going to re-record it.
Yeah.
So it's very much ideal, isn't it? Because it's very meaning focused. It's very much about completion and judging task. All right, there's going to be some judgment of the task measuring how accurate his language is. Because if he's a perfectionist, I imagine that if you're correcting him on stuff later, he's going to want to go back and redo those bits maybe.
Yeah.
So this is where sometimes we don't fully agree with Mike Long, who thinks that tasks, well, I mean, it's nothing to disagree with as a fundamental principle. Tasks should be measured on non-linguistic criteria on their success or failure. But there are some tasks in which accuracy of language does impact on how well the task is done. And this is probably one of them. So I don't think there's anything wrong with using some linguistic criteria to measure how successful the task actually is. How would you take it? So let's, you know, okay, so he's not comfortable with some of the input you tried to give him. If you had time and resources and you had maybe more students, imagine you had like lots of students coming to you to help them improve their YouTube videos, and you could start. How could you maybe get better input for him? Maybe not even so much in terms of language, but as you say, intonation, pace.
I think the first thing that comes to mind, because he's trying to broadcast via YouTube, using that medium, my first recourse would be to go watch some life coaching videos, I think. TED Talks, perhaps, for presentational purposes. YouTube videos, I know that he tells me that it was years ago that he was influenced by Tony Robbins, the very famous and very rich American life coach that I've since learned about since starting with him. I think watching those kinds of videos for the level of energy, the pacing, as you say, I think would be a place to start with him.
Yeah, I agree with you. And if you had time, and maybe something you can do on a limited level is because YouTube videos tend to have transcripts where you can generate a transcript. TED Talks has.
I've been trying to work with those after. In fact, I was reading your flight cancellation on Freed, and I tried doing the same. I followed the instructions for the Black Mirror episode, but unfortunately, here in Poland, that Black Mirror episode only has Polish subtitles. So I have tried the technique with other videos that do give options for English, right. But I was quite frustrated at the beginning not being able to get a change transcript.
I think there were two, I remember one that had Polish subtitles of that scene, maybe I linked to the wrong one. But
I think I searched, actually. I just searched it on YouTube. I don't think I went through the link. I don't think.
Okay.
I can't remember now.
Well, yeah, it's worth, I'll have a look as well later on, but yeah, that would scupper it. But, okay, assuming that you can get some transcripts and you have time to maybe tidy them up, because YouTube aren't, I mean, if it's TED Talks, there's no problem, because TED Talks is all perfectly transcribed. And you can start building up making a little corpus of motivational speakers.
Yeah.
And like you say, start with the people that influence him, people that he says are influences for him, then that's obviously a good place to start.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, this is, okay, but you maybe wanting to look, one springs to mind, it might not be suitable, but there's a lesson that Jamie Keddy put on his website, and I used it a few times, and it's about a psychology experiment about motivation. Mm-hmm. You know the candle experiment?
I don't know it. I've seen Jamie Keddy's website, but I've not. I don't recall.
If you search for the candle experiment on his website, the candle, is it the candle? They just search for candle. It's the only one. Anyway, it's about a psychology experiment of motivation. I won't bore you with the details, but it's pretty interesting. And as a task in class, it's quite cool because you can give students either a picture of the objects used in the experiment, because they tested how people solved the problem. So it's a problem-solving task. It's a it's a reasoning gap. Some you know you have to you don't know how to figure it out, and you have to come to agreement on how it's done. Mm-hmm. And it involves some pretty basic household items. You can even get the items, taken from your house and taken into class. But the point of the experiment was to show that for some types of job or some types of activity, financial motivation doesn't help. Financial incentive doesn't help.
Okay.
For creative jobs, for example, telling somebody you're going to give them an X amount of bonus for getting it done faster doesn't necessarily result in it getting done faster or getting done well. Whereas maybe for more repetitive jobs that require less creativity, then the X dollar incentive is going to result in it getting faster and done fine.
Yeah.
But anyway, he uses a section of that video, and it's on TED. And I have used, even though I find the guy quite pompous and arrogant, not Jamie Keddy, the guy in the video.
The TED video.
I still like the way he introduces his motivation. It's a motivational talk about motivation, really.
Okay.
And what he does is this classic move of telling an anecdote about himself, and a kind of humble anecdote. He's not bragging, to introduce the topic of his. And I just thought it was a nice, and I think when you watch enough of these kind of presentations, you can do a kind of basic discourse analysis, because you can look at, for example, how people introduce their talks, and you'll probably find a variety of things, but maybe you don't find that many different things. There'll be the classic, I'm going to talk about A, B, and C. We don't see that very often anymore. Maybe there's people coming in with the kind of a question to really engage the audience, and in this case, the guy is using an anecdote. So once you get a range of these things, then you've got some input that at least maybe the topic isn't exactly relevant. Maybe the vocabulary is not what he needs, but you can look at ways of introducing. And this one in particular, I think, has got a really good model of stress and intonation.
Okay. And that's the Keddy psychology. He uses that TED video in...
Yeah, if you want to search for it directly on TED, I think you'll find it as well if you search for... The Puzzle of Motivation.
Puzzle of Motivation.
It's called The Puzzle of Motivation.
Okay, thank you.
So, the Keddy lesson might be interesting to you. The video itself might be interesting to you and your student.
Yeah.
And this is something I've done, is let's look at the introduction and let's identify what the moves are. And this is where later on in the course we'll look at this discourse analysis. But it's not just about analyzing the grammar or the main vocabulary used. Of course, that's part of it. But what are the moves, the discursive moves that you find? So examples of discursive moves that we'll look at later in the course would be things like academic abstracts, that they have to be written with an introduction, with a methodology in a certain order, you know. They use a lot of passive voice. So you've got the grammar and the vocab of an abstract, and then you've got the discursive moves, the pattern it's meant to follow.
Yeah.
When you start looking at presentations, it's a lot freer, of course, than an academic abstract, but there may be a range of moves that people choose from. For example, different types of introduction, different types of ways of giving examples. What are the usual things with motivational videos? The takeaways, they have.
People
to take away something at the end of it.
Yeah, well, the moral of the story.
Yeah, that kind of thing. So that's where you can start to collect examples, and you can do a kind of rudimentary analysis of discourse, and you can think, well, that was a cool introduction. He might benefit. He might not do that kind of introduction, but he might benefit at least from a little bit of work on stress and intonation. You can investigate that for yourself. And I think that's and the other thing that you can do, if you do want to look more at what is the typical language or structures of these types of videos, is that if you're saving the transcripts as documents, text files or whatever, then you can build a corpus. And that's something else, again, we're going to look at later.
Okay.
But the platform we're going to look at is called Sketch Engine. You can.
I think I've seen this. I think I might have it bookmarked, actually.
Right.
But I haven't used it often at all.
Okay. Well, it's something, you know, you don't feel like you have to investigate it right now, because we will be going into it in the analyzing discourse.
Okay.
But it's not free, unfortunately, but there are other options available. But there's a Thinkorswim trial, and people of university access can usually get access to it. So what I would suggest is maybe don't sign up for it now unless you want to pay for it later.
Okay.
Sign up for it closer to the session. But maybe I'll send you some other ones that are more basic, but just involve pasting in the text that you've got, the documents that you've got.
Yeah.
And it can do an analysis of words. It can give you frequency lists.
Is this the one that you mentioned in your article on free, the word and phrase?
These are the basic, really basic tools that I
put
on that because I figured they were free, and but they don't give a huge depth of, you can't do that much with them, but you can get a basic idea.
Okay.
Frequency of words, and you can generate lists of phrases that are more frequent. And the more of these you have, the better the results. And you can start to look at chunks that occur frequently. You can even compare your corpus with another one to see which ones are used more frequently than they are in general English.
Okay.
So you start to see vocabulary that's key for motivational talks. So all that can give you an idea of perhaps vocab you could be feeding to him or guiding him towards using or exposing him to. That sounds interesting.
Okay. Sorry, I lost you for just a couple of seconds there.
No, sorry, I was just finishing. Yeah, these would be my suggestions.
Okay.
If you wanted to take that further. But it sounds good. I mean, I guess his feedback's good. Is it?
Yeah, he's extremely pleased, to be fair. And I am also pleased that I'm helping him achieve what he wants to achieve. I feel very much that because he is motivated and he will listen to the podcasts, watch YouTube videos himself, I have some students who expect to come along because most of my students only have an hour a week. For example, individual students only have an hour. And then some of the, last year I had a group that weren't happy that they weren't learning quick enough. And when I was asking them, well, what are you doing outside of the hour that we have? Well, not much, actually. Then it's almost as if they expect me to download my English experience and knowledge directly and upload into their
brains.
But this student, I feel quite lucky with insofar as he's thinking that I'm helping him make so much progress when in fact it's his motivation and his focus on what he wants to do that I think is carrying the day.
Yeah, it makes a lot of difference, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And the fact he's engaging with the language is that Jeff? No. I thought Jeff was joining us for a sec. But it was just his face peeking out on my browser. What about, since it's just me and you, I could talk about a lesson I've done recently, or you could.
Okay. No, please. You see, one of the things that I've got here, one of the things that I realize about my own experience is that after the CELTA, because I mentioned in the post yesterday about being an independent and precarious teacher. I don't have much contact with other teachers where our timetables coincide, where I can go and observe somebody else. So I'm very much feeling my way as I go, relying on textbooks and whatnot and blogs and posts like I'm free. But I'd love to hear.
I'm happy to talk about something, I suppose. Similar to what you're mentioning, because I'm thinking of a recent class with I've got a group, a small group of two in a company, but they do different jobs. It's really infuriating.
Okay.
One of them is a sales guy and the other one's an IT guy, which just rules out anything but conversational dogma type stuff, what I do with them, and try to find points of connection, because apart from that, they're hugely different personalities. The sales guy is as you'd expect a salesperson to be. I mean, he's getting close to retirement, but he's a big character and he's, you know, he knows how to express himself. And the IT guy is like how you'd expect an IT guy to be. So, I mean, this is the thing, probably something you recognize.
Yes.
Teaching in company. You get the groups, and in this case, it's a kind of financial reason why these two are in the same group together rather than a pedagogic reason.
Yes.
And that's the best you can do, you know. And sometimes we find tasks that are more general that we do with the two of them. But they're very often discussion type tasks, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I had the IT guy on his own the other day. Of course, they never warned me about this. So
I was like, they never do, do they?
No. And he's just a lot more talkative when the other guy's not there. He comes well. He's not such a, and he's quite. I mean, he's his name's Washington, and he's from Ecuador. And the boss of the company thinks that his name's Ecuador and he's from Washington. So he's a kind of this laughingstock figure in the company to a certain extent, but they kind of respect him because he knows what he's doing. And he'd been installing electrical stuff, and it turned out that the workers who'd been brought in to do the electrical installation were Indian, and in fact spoke more English than Spanish.
Right.
So he suddenly found himself having to tell them what to do in English. So it was like this task suddenly, this is really what I mean by TBLT on the fly, is like you can't do any more anything more student-centered than try to respond to a task as it seems to emerge as a need, I think, and then try to do something with it. And I knew that all I was going to be able to do is may take advantage of that 90-minute class to try and do something with that task, because next week Ignacio was going to be back and it was going to be impossible.
Yeah. And he's going to shut down again.
Yeah, and he needed to do it that week. I mean, the work was getting finished, and so all we could do is like, you do, you know, like you say, get them to do it. I'm the Indian worker. What am I doing wrong? What do they do wrong? And he tries to explain to me what they do wrong, because it sounded like they didn't really know what they were doing. So he had to kind of direct them a lot.
Right.
So it starts with that. And then you realize, of course, I don't know the bloody vocabulary for some of these things that they're installing. I just don't know it. Uh-huh. So what? All you can do, get out the dictionary, get out the Google Translate, get out the, you know, the open a web page and then see what you can do. And we just started building a word list. So it turns into something quite explicit as we go along.
Mm-hmm.
But he gets a word list in the Google Doc that he can go back and refer to. And we just did it over and over again. Tell me something else they do wrong.
Right. And what was his feedback after? You say it's quite recent. Well, have you had a lesson since then?
Quite recent. No, I mean, he said that it was for him, it just gave him more confidence. But at the end of the day, he's somebody that feels they have a decent level of English when it comes to talking about technical matters.
Mm-hmm.
But not, he can't have a conversation. But I think that it's much more to do with his personality. I think he finds it hard to have a conversation in his first language. And the fact is, he either mistranslates or mispronounces a lot of the technical vocabulary.
Right.
So this is another example of where, and we're talking about one-on-ones here, right? So it's a special case. But students' identification of their own needs is sometimes not enough. As a teacher, we're also capable of seeing, wait a minute, okay, yes, he knows a lot of technical vocabulary, but doesn't always sound right to me, and it sounds, you know, it's badly pronounced. It's very heavily influenced by Spanish. And there you've got a kind of initial point. He needs to be able to communicate clearly, and the key words are technical words, they're bits of equipment.
Mm-hmm.
The best thing I can do is give him lots of feedback on that.
Yeah.
Repeated exposure.
And then that's why you mentioned about going into the explicit
Yeah, exactly. Because we've got limited time. Ideally, you'd want to be doing this task over again, different versions over 2 or 3 lessons, maybe, you know, until he gets more confident with it. But I think when time's tight, and I do word lists from all my classes, I always have Google Docs open. Mm-hmm. And with a plugin called Kaizena that you might know about, it's free.
I don't know, actually. Kaizena?
Do you use Google Docs?
I don't, no. I've seen some blog posts about, I was thinking about having, I can't remember where I saw it, to be honest. I saw a post about using Google Docs to have the students report on their own lessons, sharing the responsibility between, like moving the responsibility, rotating it around the group.
Yeah.
One student have the responsibility of uploading what they've actually learned on a particular lesson, and then for anybody else to have their input into what they understood from the lesson or how they reacted to or what their particular take was on the lesson. Sure. And then keep it central and shift it around as we go. But I must be honest, I've not followed that up.
Well, I found that we used to use a platform called Edmodo. It allowed you to write, it's a bit like our platform at all. But you pass around the responsibility to students to write a summary, and it's like a post on Edmodo.
Edmodo,
like Quasimodo.
Okay.
With a D.
Okay.
Edmodo. Okay. Yeah. And it's free as well. I think it's you can buy plugins for it or whatever. But in the end, I just found Google Docs a far easier way to do it. A lot of people have got Gmail addresses anyway, and once you share it with them, there's no need to send anything. They've automatically got it every time it's updated. You can do as you say, you can have students take responsibility for writing a summary of what happened in the class.
Mm-hmm.
And or you can do it, or you can assign someone to do it, is keep a list of vocab that comes up. So especially handy, I think, when you've got one-to-one small group classes in companies and you don't have a whiteboard.
Yeah.
Or you don't have flip chart.
So they all have their laptops and you're essentially communicating through it, but using it as a store.
Using it as a notepad.
Yeah.
Basically, as a whiteboard stroke notepad. And then if you use things like Quizlet or you use whatever apps they can use to help them memorize vocabulary, then it's quite easy. You've always got a record there of the vocab and you can kind of copy that into Quizlet and generate stuff. But I think the most important thing, and the other thing I think is useful is this Kaizena plugin or extension to Google Docs.
Is it spelled like the Japanese Kaizen and then with an A at the end?
I don't know. Kaizena.
Yeah, that's Kaizen, the Japanese thing, and then A at the end, I think. So you use it in production facilities and whatnot. It's a Japanese system of monitoring and improvement.
Well, that's the idea, I suppose, because you can use it. If students submit written work to you, they can do it directly in Google Docs, of course, or they can give you a Word document that you can convert to Google Doc.
Yeah.
And you can leave oral feedback.
Okay.
So you can highlight a paragraph,
mm-hmm.
and then you can record yourself chatting for 30 seconds about strengths and weaknesses. Or you can highlight specific words, and you can leave an oral comment. And this kind of multimodal approach to correction has got some kind of academic support, as might be more effective than written corrective feedback on writing. Anyway, that's one thing you can use it for. But if you use Google Docs just mainly to write word lists or vocab lists from the lesson, if there are words that are tripping students up, you can use Kaizena. Sorry, pronunciation-wise, you can use Kaizena to record
to
a model.
And I presume also that it's rather quick in comparison to giving written feedback to each and every student if you're recording 30-second, a minute long.
This is the million-dollar question. I mean, if it doesn't, if it takes longer than written feedback, then you have to ask yourself whether it's worth doing. I started doing it recording screencasts of me giving feedback to written work, and I found it took me longer. And at that time, Kaizen wasn't very good. But since then, I see it's improved a lot. So I started using it for the word lists. But at the moment, I've just started teaching. One student is doing CAE, so I'll start getting some writing from her in the next few weeks, and I'll probably start seeing if I can do it that way.
Okay.
See what happens. But it's, you know, it's a bit like, rather than giving a student back written feedback or with correction code or whatever, you might sometimes sit down with a student if you've got a one-to-one or you've got some time at the end of a class and talk them through bits you've underlined or whatever. Mm-hmm. But anyway, that's beside the point. The main thing is with just getting him to do the task and going with his instincts, you know, in a lot of ways about how he had to give instructions and me trying to make those clearer.
I suppose because again, it's similar to the student that I have in so far as they know that they have something that they need to accomplish, and we're helping them try to accomplish that specific task. One of the things that what I'm trying to do in my piecemeal fashion is try to introduce more task type activities to more students. I've mentioned this particular student. I've mentioned the business groups that I've got. And I mentioned yesterday, I wrote yesterday on the platform. I have another student here, but the difficulty I have is, and I suppose this comes back to the needs analysis as much as you can get the needs analysis, and I presume it should be easy to extract that information on a one-to-one basis from students, but a lot of the time students don't know what it is they need to accomplish. And I find that somewhat frustrating. I just need communication. I just want to learn how to communicate. It can be quite...
Well, one thing you can do that's... I mean, are you talking about groups or individuals?
Individuals. I don't have too many problems with them. I have more problems with the groups, I have to say. I think that might be my teaching technique or inexperience that's the problem there, as well as them being resistant to group work. But with the one-to-one... with the one-to-one students, sometimes at the beginning when I meet a new student, I'll say, okay, what do you need to do in English? What kind of activities do you need to, are you involved in? How do you normally use it? What can you work on? How do you need to improve? Well, I just want a general understanding. I just want to be able to communicate.
Yeah.
And it's that I they seem to be less, on my part, less focused, more conversational.
Sure.
And I'm not sure how to structure that, to be honest with you.
Well, you know, there's nothing wrong with these types of classes just being openly communicative and maybe not about particular specific tasks. I mean, I think this is more the dogma approach, not the task-based dogma version I was trying to outline, but just more based on conversation, developing a conversation with the student, helping them say what they want to be able to say, and it sometimes maybe pulling back and doing a little bit of language work with them. I think that's the way some of my one-to-ones tend to go. But if you do think there are tasks there that you want to try to get out of the student, sometimes, you know, rather than asking open questions, look to maybe to come up with a list of things that you think are quite general tasks people often have to do. I mean, does the person travel to countries where they have to use English, for example?
Yeah.
And does the person want to watch or read anything in English? And what kind of things do they like watching or reading? And then maybe they don't do it much just now. Maybe they watch a series in their first language, dubbed, but they want to be able to start watching it in English, for example. Do you know what I mean?
I do, yeah.
That kind of thing, you can end up with a more a ticky boxy type thing where do you want to do this? Do you do it now? Do you want to do it in the future? Mm-hmm. And there could be a few work related things in there depending on the person. Might you have to call a client in English? Might you have to give a presentation in English?
One of the students I've got at the moment, he's a professor at the City University. He heads the environmental protection department there, and he's recently been to Spitsbergen, Svalbard, on a science expedition to check glacial. What did he call it? So essentially testing for contaminants in the water from the glaciers mm-hmm. have been in Spitsbergen. And he gave a presentation to other scientists when he came back in his own language, and he thought it would be interesting. This is one of the students who says he just wants to communicate in English. Mm-hmm. And then he dropped this in my lap that he wanted to learn how to do it in English, and it gave us a targeted focus.
Yes.
And then we worked through using his slides and whatnot, and it felt much more rewarding that I knew that I was helping him with something specific that he could, you know, take benefit or get benefit from at a later date.
Yeah.
Than just having the normal, as you say, one-to-one communicative conversational lessons that I would have had with him.
This is the problem sometimes with the open conversational classes is that they tend to, a lot of vocab can come up over a few classes. And it's not often very related to each other, and it might be more or less useful for students. And sometimes this is the difficulty when you're generating all this conversation on diverse topics, is getting the student exposed to the key things often enough that they might start to acquire them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So if you're working with certain tasks, then there is a kind of set of useful language that often goes with these tasks. It might not be essential language to do the task well, depending on the topic or what the task actually is, but it's not task essential language, but task appropriate language. And like we're talking about with your other student and the motivational videos, mm-hmm. there may be bits of discourse that get used a lot in these things that students have got more chance of acquiring with the kind of repeated exposures. Do you know what I mean? Just this.
I do, yeah.
Conversational stuff is great, but often it covers lots of bases and.
Especially with my lower learners, I know that they need a lot of input, so I would provide a lot of exercises, for example, between classes for them to do as homework, and use the time in class for them to. Try to communicate with the resources that they already have. Mm. And at the start, I've tried to implement a frequency-based input, focusing on the 200 most frequent verbs, for example, and trying to get them exposed to that and whatnot. But and it's helping them a lot. I just wonder how efficient it is, that type of way of doing it.
Yeah, I mean, I always think it's how Krashen puts it. Students don't need to be studying, for example, decontextualized lists of the most frequent words. If they read, they'll be reading them already because mm-hmm. they're the most frequent for a reason. They just appear time and again. So Long as well, I think, acknowledges that any TBLT course is not necessarily going to give students enough exposure to all the language that they need, and they need to do things with the language outside of the tasks they're practicing in class. They need exposed as well to the most frequent language. So he advocates reading programs, reading and listening, in fact, that run parallel to TBLT courses. And I don't know about you, but my most successful students, the ones that get to the highest level, whether it's by passing exams or just very often becoming very fluent and accurate speakers, are often readers.
Yeah.
There's a lot to it. And watchers, because I think this is a new category, people who watch series, I think.
Netflix. Netflix is something that I recommend to all of my students if they don't have it, to get it.
Right.
Because I've seen, based on my own experience. Just a quick experience. When I met my wife, she was upper intermediate level in English. And this was 13 years ago or so. And we used to put subtitles on television when we lived in the UK. And she learned very quickly, up to high fluency levels, using this type of activity. And I recommend it to my students. I've got a CAE student, for example, who, when we are, he will often say to me, can you help me with this homework? I need some help on this C1 level coursework that they're doing at school. He's only a 16-year-old. And I'll ask him, why do you think it's this answer and not that answer after he's had a go? And he'll say, like you've mentioned before, he will say, it just feels right. Because I've heard it so many times, for example. And he is an avid watcher of, he's addicted to series on Netflix, watches it all the time.
Right, right.
And it's a great source of input for...
It is, and there are more studies being done now about people watching things with subtitles, without subtitles in first language, subtitles in second language. Mm-hmm. And there's no doubt about it that it helps. Some studies are being done, I think, looking at people watching series combined with some explicit teaching as well. I still think that if you can get students who are interested in reading, I think it's still a superior source of input, just because you're just more in control of stopping, going back, rereading. Whereas we're reluctant to do that with a series, we just want to sit back and let it play. Mm-hmm. And so these things are much more ephemeral, aren't they? The language appears and disappears. So I think reading is maybe a superior kind of way of getting that input, but there's no doubt about it that watching stuff really, really helps and exposes people to colloquial English, which they maybe don't always get in books.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's great. Great, Stephen. Anything else? Do you want to, you've got 5 minutes.
Can I ask you about the session, the output task for the session just briefly? And just to make sure I understand.
Yep.
What I understand from it is if we take the first option, of your Black Mirror, the one I mentioned earlier on. You're essentially asking us to adapt that or amend it as we see fit to a particular set of students, either real or imaginary.
Yeah.
And that is the how it would apply to that particular
set
of students, yes?
And you don't have to write a lesson plan or anything.
Okay.
But you just kind of, it's like a speculative essay, I suppose. Obviously, you wouldn't choose it if it was completely inappropriate task for the group. You could do a hatchet job and say, "I've got some Filipino hotel maids who are never going to take a plane in their lives, and it's completely inappropriate, and they didn't want to do it." You know, that you could pass it because that would be a valid critique if that were the group. But obviously, I think you try and, whatever version of the task that you do, pick a task that roughly interests them or would be needful for them or whatever, so that you can look at what works and what doesn't work. Do you know what I mean? Or what you think you'd have to change, or maybe we need more explicit teaching with this, because I don't unpack every stage in the lesson in great detail. And if you choose that lesson, for example, but it's completely open to being critiqued or being changed or chopped. I'll tell you a funny story. We had a guy on the first course who shall remain nameless, but he recorded an hour and a half video of telling me what a terrible lesson it was. how his 12-year-old Thai school children were shocked by the bad language, and I was saying, you know what I mean? Number one, it's supposed to be hypothetical if you did a lesson. Great that you did it,
but you shouldn't be inflicting lessons on children if you think they're inappropriate. That's your bad, not mine. But anyway, if that makes sense, and the idea is to keep that context as brief as possible. We're not expecting, learner profiles for the class.
Yeah.
But a very brief outline, who they are. Are they adults, teens, children? What rough level? What kind of course are they studying? Could even be a one-to-one, you know? And that would might bring its own, if it was a one-to-one, that would bring its own approach, because the task is kind of designed for a class. The role plays would need to be managed in a different way if it was just you and the other student. So
yeah,
that's the idea.
Okay, all right. Thanks for
confirming
or helping me understand more on it.
Yeah, it's just like an initial, because we're going to go into this stuff in a lot more detail, but I think we've come far enough to just have a basic idea of what a task is and some models of how it might be used in class, although we're going to investigate them. So it's a chance to, we've been theoretical for the first couple of sessions. It's a chance to do more practical stuff or think about more practical things. Okay. Feel free to use your own example. That's part of the reason for this tutorial today, was to talk about the lessons that maybe you could then write up.
Okay.
And feel free to take our conversation today and use one of your own ideas as for the assessment.
Thanks. As I mentioned to John before, I haven't had the most experience in adaptation, so it might be. I'll weigh it up over the next few days, but it might be worth my while practicing or trying to adapt. I'd certainly appreciate the feedback on.
Go for it. Just please don't send me an hour and a half video.
No. No, I won't.
No, if I remember right, and I must have these videos somewhere, he actually recorded the whole lesson too. And they sent me an hour, or I don't know how long it was, of him ranting.
And so early in the course as well.
We do lack, I have to say, in general, and this is about teaching in general, we do lack having access to resources of watching other people teach. And we've got a few coming later in the course, but I noticed the post by Matthew Noble today. He tried to set up a website, I think, where teachers shared videos of themselves.
I've not seen that,
I don't think it got very far. But if you look up his tweets from today, you might.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, I think it's something we need to supply more of. And but feel free to try it out and use that as the basis for your evaluation. It doesn't have to be, I would do that. Why couldn't it be, I did do that and I didn't do this, but next time I might do it the other way around or not. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Good.
All right. Thank you very much, Neil.
Not at all, Stephen. And see you on the forum.
Definitely. This will be available later on, I trust.
Yeah, I'll either send this to you, maybe because it's just me and you, I'll send you the recording.
Oh, thank you. Thanks.
The other one, if there's more people on it, maybe it's going to be a better one to put on the website.
Yeah.
If you don't mind that.
Not at all, no. I know you mentioned about alternating before, because there's only one, but one.
We normally alternate.
One to one here.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's probably more beneficial for everybody to listen to the group interaction rather than.
Yeah.
I would have thought anyway.
Yeah, well, maybe just do it like that. If it's one person, we'll try not to use that as the public, well, not public, but, you know, the shared recording.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Grand.
All right. Have a nice evening, Neil. And
you too.
And a nice weekend.
You too.
See you on the phone.
Take care.
And you. Bye.
Bye.